chemicals or some chemical elements are electronegative, okay, or they have a slightly negative charge to them. We said those that are electronegative are those that are in the upper right-hand portion of the periodic table. Of course, we kind of always ignore the noble gases because they're stable anyways, right? But nitrogen, oxygen, fluorine, chlorine, and sulfur are slightly electronegative, or they have a slightly negative charge. One other thing that I mentioned right before class ended was that hydrogen has a slightly positive charge, okay? And so both of these are important when we start talking about hydrogen bonding. Now, before we can even talk about hydrogen bonding, another principle that we need to talk about is something that we call polarity, okay? And basically what polarity in a molecule is it's when part of the molecule is slightly negatively charged, okay? So, for example, if we had water here, okay? Water is H2O, right? Now, the question is that molecule polar? In order to be polar, a molecule must have an electronegative element involved in it. So, in the case of water, it has the potential to be polar because of what? Okay, it has oxygen. Now, before we really talk about whether or not it's polar, let's look at methane gas. Does it have the potential to be polar? It doesn't. Why? Because it doesn't have one of these five chemical elements in it, nitrogen, oxygen, fluorine, chlorine, sulfur. So we could just say, without even worrying about this any further, that is nonpolar, right? Okay. So it's nonpolar. Now, oxygen, on the other hand, it has an electronegative element in it. And what polarity is it's when one part of the molecule is more negative than another. So if we kind of think of a big negative swarm around oxygen, one part of the molecule is definitely more negative than the other parts of the molecule. In fact, these other parts of the molecule are slightly positive, okay? And so, in the case of water, we would say that it is polar, okay? Any questions about that? What about this molecule that we've looked at before, NaCl? Is that molecule polar or nonpolar? Okay, first of all, does it have an electronegative element involved in it? Okay, it does. So is one part of the molecule negative where the other part is not? It is, right? Okay, so it would be polar. Does that make sense to everybody?
Okay. So what exactly is an electronegative?
The electronegative elements are those that are slightly negative. Okay, the five elements, nitrogen, oxygen, fluorine, chlorine, and sulfur. Okay. All right. So generally, if we see one of these electronegative elements in the molecule, most of the time, the molecule is going to be what? Polar, right? Okay. Now, there are some exceptions. This is what we breathe right here, O2. We don't breathe just the oxygen element, right? Why don't we breathe oxygen element, by the way?
It's unstable.
It's unstable, right? So we don't just find oxygen out there floating around. What oxygen comes in is it comes in the form of O2, all right? And so, in this case, is that molecule polar or nonpolar? Okay, it's actually nonpolar, even though we have electronegative elements. So we have this big negative part of the molecule here, a big negative part of the molecule here. However, there's not one part of the molecule that's more negative than the other. That's what we said polarity was. In other words, there's a negative pull in this direction, a negative pull in this direction. They're equal, so it's nonpolar. Yeah.
Are there any of the electronegative elements that are more negative than others?
Yes. Uh-huh. And can cause more polarity to occur. Generally, the closer you get to the upper corner, the more negative it becomes. So the most is fluorine, then these two are about equal, oxygen and chlorine. And then nitrogen and sulfur are about equal. Okay. So we have, that's one example of a nonpolar molecule that has an electronegative element. Most of the time, at least for purposes of the test, with the exception of O2, most of the molecules that we talk about if they have an electronegative element in it, they're going to be polar. If they don't, they're nonpolar. Okay. Maybe another possible exception is we looked at a molecule that looked something like this the other day. Okay. It wasn't quite this long, right? But it was a little bit, had a little bit shorter carbon chain. The question is this molecule polar or nonpolar? How many of you say it's polar? You got to raise your hand. You got to have to vote. Okay, about half of you. How many of you say it's nonpolar? Oh, some of you didn't vote. Okay. Regardless of how you voted, you would have been right. Okay. In other words, this part of the molecule right here, is it polar or nonpolar? Okay, so this part is nonpolar. So sometimes molecules can have polar ends and nonpolar ends is what I'm trying to get at here. Okay. This part over here, we have an electronegative element there, one there. And so there's a negative pull in this direction, one in this direction. But there's no negative pull right here. And so this end is polar. Okay. So sometimes molecules, part of the molecule can be polar, part of the molecule can be nonpolar. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. Any questions about that? Okay, what significance does polarity have in terms of biology? Well, the rule with polarity is this, is that light dissolves like. Okay? Light dissolves like. What that means is that polar substances dissolve in other polar substances. Nonpolar substances dissolve in nonpolar substances. However, polar substances do not dissolve in nonpolar substances, okay, and vice versa. All right, so let me ask you this. Does salt dissolve in water? Okay, it does. Why? Water's polar, salt's polar, so salt is going to dissolve in water, okay? Does that make sense? Now let me ask you a question that will make you think a little bit. Is your skin polar or nonpolar? Now you have to vote on this. How many say it's polar? Okay, a couple of you. How many say it's nonpolar? Okay, most of you say it's nonpolar. Why did most of you say it's nonpolar? And it is nonpolar.
Because we dissolved in water.
Yeah, when you got in the shower this morning, you didn't dissolve away, right? Okay, so your skin must be nonpolar. Now think about this. Is oil polar or nonpolar? It's nonpolar, right? Okay, it doesn't dissolve in water. Now, do any of you have a dad that's a mechanic for a living? Okay. Some of you? Doesn't look like they never wash their hands. I mean, mechanics, they're always greasy and stuff. They can't ever get the grease out. Why? In the oil. What? Okay, so it doesn't dissolve in water. That's one thing. But if you think about this, your skin doesn't dissolve in water. Oil doesn't dissolve in water. But so your skin's nonpolar, oil's nonpolar, so oil can actually dissolve into your skin and become a part of your skin. Does that make sense? So that's why they always look like their hands are dirty, but they're really not. You can actually dissolve the oil out of your hands using stronger nonpolar solvents. The problem with that is it also eats away your skin, okay? Because your skin is also nonpolar. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. So one of the characteristics that we use to determine whether something or not is polar or nonpolar, one really good standard would be to ask yourself whether or not does that substance dissolve in water. If it dissolves in water, it's probably polar. If it doesn't dissolve in water, it is probably nonpolar. Does that make sense? Because water is a really, really good solvent. Right? Any questions about polarity? So now back to hydrogen bonds. Now that we've talked a little bit about polarity and know polar molecule is, hydrogen bonding occurs between what element? You should be able to guess this one. Hydrogen. Okay, it has hydrogen involved in it, right? But hydrogen bonding occurs between molecules. Okay, it doesn't occur directly between elements. Hydrogen bonding occurs between molecules with hydrogen in them and molecules that are polar and have some other element in them. Okay? So for example, in water, what we find here is that water is polar, right? It has a large negative charge around the oxygen, correct? We just determined that. We said that hydrogen is what? Slightly positive, okay? And so where hydrogen bonding occurs is between molecules. So if you have a glass of water, you have another water molecule here, right? And that water molecule is slightly negative. The hydrogen ions are the hydrogen elements are slightly positive. And so what hydrogen bonding is it's a loose bond between the positively charged hydrogen element and a polar molecule with a slightly negative charge. And so there's a bond that occurs between these two water molecules. Okay. Now, admittedly, hydrogen bonding is the weakest type of bond, but it's better than no bond at all. All right? Any questions about that? So up here on this overhead, you can look at the water molecules here. And these dotted lines represent hydrogen bonds. So again, hydrogen bonds occur between molecules, all right? And so hydrogen bonding occurs between each of these water molecules here. This is another way of looking at hydrogen bonding, another depiction. You can see this water molecule right here. It hydrogen bonds to at least two, maybe three different water molecules, all right? Again, hydrogen bonding is a weak type of bond, but it's a very important type of bond for living things. All right? Any questions about that? So why is it important? Well, hydrogen bonding is important mostly when we talk about water. Living things don't survive without water. Okay, so water is probably the most important molecule for all living things. If we were to say, okay, which molecule is the most important molecule? Probably water. Living things don't survive without water, okay? Well, why is water so important? And the answer is it's because of some of the properties of water. And here we have listed a number of properties of water. First of all, water is good cohesive and good adhesive, okay? What that means is the water bonds to itself well, and it also bonds to other polar substances fairly well, all right? So, adhesion means to bond to itself, cohesion means to bond to other things. Now, just to kind of give you an idea of why cohesion is important, or an example of where it can be important, and then we'll talk about it with animals. Have any of you ever tried to fill a glass of water over full? You ever tried that? Does it work? Yeah, it does. It actually bubbles above the top of the glass. So if you have a glass here, if you haven't tried this before, go home and try this after class. If you fill it clear full of water, the water actually will go above the top of the glass. Why will it do that?
It sticks to itself.
What? Okay, it sticks to itself. Using what? Hydrogen bonding. In other words, this water molecule that you see up here, it's held in place because it's hydrogen bonded to another water molecule here. Okay. Does that make sense to everybody? Now, if you tried that with milk, could you do that with milk? You can't. Milk will only go right to the top of the glass. Why? Because there is no hydrogen bonding in milk. Does that make sense? Now, why is this important to animals or plants or other living things? And the reason why is, if water holds to itself well, if you can get water inside of your body, it's harder for the water to leave your body, which is a good thing, right? Okay, it's harder to get rid of the water, and so you can still survive. Water is also a good adhesive, which means that it bonds well to other polar substances. Now, this isn't important to all organisms, but many organisms use this principle to allow them to survive. How many of you know what water skeeters are? The water striders, the little things that cruise around in the water. How do they do that? They actually have little hairs on their feet or hair-like structures that are polar, and they actually hydrogen bond to the water. And so what they're doing is they're using the water to keep them above the surface of the water. Okay. Any questions about that? Water has a high specific heat. What that means is that it takes a lot more energy than you would expect to raise the temperature of water. Okay. The reasoning behind that, again, is hydrogen bonding. Okay. So here's what happens when you heat some water. Let me just show you this here really simply. Okay. If you start heating this water molecule right here on the board, what's going to happen is some of that heat is going to be transferred through this hydrogen bond. Other heat, once this molecule becomes heated, it's going to transfer some of that heat energy to this water molecule. And so it actually takes a lot more energy than you would expect, or that you would be able, or that you would calculate, to raise the temperature of water. Okay? In other words, water spreads heat a lot better than other substances. Now just let me give you a contrasting example. If you put a pan of water on a stove, it takes a while for the water to get hot, right? Okay, even if you have the flame all the way up. What if you put a piece of metal over that same flame? It gets hot really, really quick, right? I mean, you can touch it for very long. And the reason why is because metal has a low specific heat, which means that it just heats up very, very quickly. Water dissipates that energy through all the water molecules, and so it takes a lot of energy to heat up water. Okay? I know most of you guys don't own your own homes yet, okay? Or have teenage kids. In fact, probably none of you have teenage kids in here. But what's the most expensive thing to run in your house? Actually, it's not.
Hot water.
Hot water heater. Yeah. How many of your parents have said, don't take such long showers, it costs too much to heat the water? And, you know, your dad's always on you about stuff like that. And that's because it is really expensive. By far and away, the most expensive thing to do in your house is to heat water. Okay. And, you know, you probably all experienced this, at least if you have a large family like I grew up in or that I have. If somebody happens to take a long shower, or mom does the dishes in the dishwasher or something before you get your chance to take a shower, the water's cold. Does the water heater heat the water up like within 10 minutes? Usually you have to wait, what, like a half hour before you can get some warm water again? Okay. And the reason why is because water has a high specific heat. Now, what implications does this have for living things? Well, the implication is this. If you go outside and you have sunlight hitting your face, is the water in your face going to start boiling right away? It's not. Why? That heat's going to be what? Dissipated, because water has a high specific heat to other parts of your body. Does that make sense? So the importance to living things is it keeps living things from heating up too quickly. Alright, does that make sense to everybody? Okay, water has a high boiling point. Okay, so it takes a lot more energy to boil water. So a molecule that's very similar in chemical structure would be something like alcohol. Okay, how many of you have ever tried to boil alcohol before? Nobody in here? Alcohol boils really quick, right? You barely put it on the stove and it starts to boil away. Whereas water, it takes a long time to boil. Now, what implication does this have for living things? Again, when you go outside and you have, you know, you're sitting in your car and the sun's hitting you right here in the face, the water in your face doesn't start to boil. It actually takes quite a bit of energy to get that water to boil. Now, if you're laying out all day long in the sunlight, yeah, the water in your body can start to boil and you get blisters, right? But why doesn't water boil very quickly? Well, again, it has to do with this hydrogen bonding, okay? What happens is there has to be enough heat energy to break this hydrogen bond here before this water molecule can go from a liquid state to a gaseous state, okay? So even though it's not a very strong bond, it's stronger than no bond at all, okay? And so that's why water has a high boiling point. Any questions? Okay, water is a good... Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to ask... What's the bowing over the cup? Is that the same concept to say if you put two pieces of glass together and the water will suck itself out?
Uh-huh. Capillary action.
Mm-hmm. That's the same.
Yep, same. It's cohesion that's doing that, yeah. That's essentially the same principle that allows water to get from the soil up into the top of the tree. It's basically capillary action. Water is a good evaporative coolant. What this means is that when you actually lose a water molecule from somebody, it takes more energy away than you would normally expect. Okay? So for example, if this water molecule here is blown away by wind, okay, what happens is a lot of energy is lost because some of the energy is transferred through this hydrogen bond. So the important thing for living organisms here is if it gets too hot and water starts to evaporate, it takes a lot of energy away from the body and cools the organism down, right? You've all experienced this before, okay? Or at least, let me give you one example, and then I'll give you one that maybe all of you have experienced. How many of you have been water skiing at Lake Powell in the middle of summer before? Okay, a few of you. It's like 90 degrees or 100 degrees outside, right? And you get out there ready to go on the water ski, and they pull you up out of the water, and you about freeze to death. You ever experienced that before? Okay? And it's like 90, 100 degrees outside. Why do you almost freeze to death?
It's when you, down so much.
Yeah, when you get up, there's lots of water in your body, and the wind starts blowing that water away, and not only is that water leaving, but a lot of the energy that's in the water in the rest of your body. Does that make sense? So it's a good evaporative coolant. Maybe a better example would be, all of you have sweated before, you go outside and the wind blows it away, you know, and you cool right down. Okay? So very important for living things. Any questions?
Does that have to do with why hot water freezes faster than cold water? Because of the... I know we did some test in like fifth grade that hot water will freeze faster because of how close or how far apart the bonds are when it's hot, other than...
Oh, it might, parts of the water molecules in the gaseous state might crystallize, and that's because they probably haven't hydrogen bonded yet. I've never heard that before.
Really?
Yeah. Water's a good solvent. We'll come back to the next one, but water's a good solvent. That, what that means is that substances dissolve very easily in water. Just because a substance is polar or nonpolar doesn't mean that other polar or nonpolar substances will dissolve in them. Some things are better dissolvers than others, I guess you could say. Those are what we call solvents, and water is one of those good solvents. All right. That's important for living things because a lot of our enzymes and other molecules need to dissolve in the water to move through the organism. Right? Water is less dense as a solid. What does that mean? And why is it important?
It floats.
Okay, it floats when it freezes. That's important for people like me who like to ice fish, but who never go ice fishing now. And for all aquatic organisms, because if water were like most substances and as a solid, it were more dense than when it was as a liquid, the ocean and lakes would freeze from the bottom up and all of the aquatic organisms would die, right? Okay. So this is why you're able to go ice fishing. Any questions? If you've never been ice fishing, man, that's fun stuff. I just never go because now my kids make me take them snowboarding every weekend instead of going fishing, so... Any questions about the properties of water? The last general chemistry principle that I want to talk about is pH. pH is a measurement of how acidic or how basic something is. Okay? Now, I'm not expecting you to know everything there is to know about pH. And most of you don't need to remember this. Well, what pH is it's the negative log of the hydrogen ion concentration of any molecule. Okay? Most of you don't need to remember that, but if you're interested in what pH is, that's what it is. The pH scale, what I want you to know is this. The pH scale goes from 0 to 14, right? So pH is ranged from 0 to 14. Something with a pH of 7 is what we consider to be a neutral pH. So the pH 7 is neutral. It's right in the middle. Anything with a pH lower than 7 is acidic in nature. Anything with a pH higher than 7 is what we call basic. Okay. Now, of course, the further away you get from that neutral pH, the more acidic or basic something gets. For example, if you have something with a pH of 6 versus something with a pH of 2, the thing with the pH of 2 is more acidic than that of 6. Does that make sense? Or going the other way, if you have something with a pH of 9 versus 12, the substance with a pH of 12 is more basic. Okay, so the further we get away from that neutral line, the more acidic or the more basic something gets. Okay. Any questions about that? Now, just to kind of give you an idea of some pHs of substances that you might be familiar with, notice that saliva, does that surprise anybody up there what saliva is? pH of 7, neutral pH. Does that surprise you? Probably thought saliva was going to be what? Acidic a little bit, but it's not. It's actually neutral. Human blood's a little bit basic. Look up there, battery acid, it has a pH of 0, which means what? That's as acidic as you can get. Okay. Beer there is fairly acidic, okay, 4.5 pH. Just another side note with drinks, how acidic is something like Pepsi or Coke? Most of them have, most pops have, at least colas have pHs of about 2.5 to 3. Okay. So very acidic. So you don't want to drink them to calm your stomach down. Okay, that's a myth. All right. And actually, I don't know how many of you have done this in elementary school. Some elementary schools will do this. But if you put a nail in like a glass of Coke and leave it for a week, the Coke will actually eat the nail. Okay, it will dissolve it because it's so acidic. Some basic substances, bleach has a pH of 9, oven cleaner, pH 13, lye, pH 14, ammonia, 11.5. Okay. Any questions about pH? Okay. So now that we understand some basic chemical principles, the next topic that we want to talk about is how that relates to living things. In organisms, there are four groups of biologically important compounds. They're what we call lipids, carbohydrates, nucleic acids, and proteins. And by the time we're done talking about this topic, you should know what a lipid or what one of these four groups of compounds are. You should know their chemical makeup and how to identify them by their chemical structure. Okay? Any questions? Okay, so lipids are things such as fats, oils, and waxes. Another group of biologically important compounds are carbohydrates. Carbohydrates include things such as starch, cellulose, chitin, and glycogen. Most of you might not even know what those substances are. What is starch, by the way? What?
That stuff you spray
in
your shirt to make
it
nice and stiff.
Okay, stuff you spray in your shirt to make stiff. Where do you get it from?
Corn.
Corn, that's one place. Starch is found in plants, okay, in all plants. Starch is the storage form of energy in plants. So when plants have excess energy, they store it in the form of starch, okay? Where would you find cellulose? Any ideas? Actually, cellulose is maybe one of the most important carbohydrates in the world. Cellulose is the component that makes up plant cell walls. All plant cells are surrounded by cellulose, something that's called cellulose. Chitin. Anybody heard of that before? Chitin is a carbohydrate that also is very important in the animal world. With what chitin is the carbohydrate that makes up the exoskeleton of arthropods. That was a lot of big words. An arthropod is something like an insect or a spider. Their exoskeleton, what does exo mean? Outside skeleton is made up of chitin. So you've all experienced this. If you step on an ant or step on a spider, you hear that exoskeleton of chitin cracking, right? Okay. Glycogen.
Is that sugar?
It is a sugar, and actually all of the carbohydrates are made up of sugars. But glycogen is found in animals. That's the storage form of energy in animals. So starch is the storage form of energy in plants. Glycogen is the storage form of energy in animals. Okay, the next group of biologically important compounds are nucleic acids. Nucleic acids include things such as DNA, RNA, and ATP. Okay. What is DNA? Okay, the acronym stands for deoxyribonucleic acid. Okay. What does it do?
Carries genetic information.
Okay, it's basically our genetic makeup. Okay, it's what makes each of us different from one another is our DNA. Okay. It's basically the controller of living things, the big boss. All right. RNA. Does anybody know what that stands for? Ribonucleic acid. Now, if you remember these terms, it will actually help you to understand the chemical structures of these molecules when we study them a little bit later on this semester. Okay. So, anybody know what ribonucleic acid is used for? That's what?
Isn't it one of the things to help replicate DNA?
Okay, she said to help replicate DNA. That is close. Okay, it doesn't actually help to replicate it, but if you think of it this way, we'll talk about this more in detail later, but DNA is kind of like the boss of the cell. It's in charge. Okay, it tells the cell what to do. In order to be the boss, you have to have workers underneath you, right, that basically go and tell the little peons what to do, kind of like the mid-level management. Okay. RNA is kind of like mid-level management. Okay. ATP, does anybody know what that stands for? Adenosine triphosphate. Adenosine triphosphate, or ATP, is probably one of the more important molecules for all living things. The energy that all living things use, the form of energy that they can use, is ATP. Okay? So for example, can you use the energy in the form it is in your candy bar when you eat a candy bar? Actually, you can't. What your body does is it converts the energy that's in that candy bar into ATP. Okay? Kind of similar to a computer or something. Really, computers or other electrical appliances, they can only use one form of energy, right? Okay. They can't use chemical forms of energy. They have to use alternating current. So living things can only use one type of energy, essentially, and that's adenosine triphosphate. Okay. And we'll talk about the chemical structure of ATP a little bit later on in the semester. Proteins. Our last group of biologically important compounds, they include things such as silk, hair, and tendons. A lot of times when people think of proteins, they think of muscle, and our muscle does have a lot of protein in it, but muscle itself is not entirely made of protein, so that's why it's not up here on the list. Okay. So those are just some examples of each of these groups of biologically important compounds. Right. Now this is a complex chemical structure, and hopefully by the end of today, you would be able to, if I were to put this chemical structure on a test, you could tell me what types of molecules it belongs to. Okay. Each of the four groups of biologically important compounds have chemical structures that are similar to one another. And when they have those chemical structures that are similar to one another, we call them functional groups. Okay. So each group of biologically important compound is going to have what we call a functional group. And what we're going to talk about is we're going to talk about the chemical structure that helps this, chemical structure of these functional groups. So we're going to break them down into what we're going to call sub-functional groups. Now, this molecule that we're looking at here is actually what we call a fatty acid. All right. Fatty acids are the functional groups of lipids. So we have lipids here. All lipids, or most lipids, have the functional group of fatty acids. Now, how do I know this is a fatty acid? Well, it's because of its subfunctional groups down here. Okay, so I'm going to list two subfunctional groups for the fatty acids. The first thing that fatty acids have is they have a long, what we call, hydrocarbon chain. Okay, so if you look here, there's this long chain, and it's made up of two chemical elements. It's made up of what? Hydrogen and carbon, therefore what we call a hydrocarbon chain. Okay, so the first subfunctional group of fatty acids is a hydrocarbon chain. Alright. So if I were to ask you what group